Closing out the week on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake the Snake Schultz with you for the next 2 hours. Leaf Hour number one.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Toronto Maple Leafs down the New Jersey Devils 4-2 to even their record at 1-1. In about 30 minutes, we'll welcome in former National Hockey Leaguer, two-time Stanley Cup champion, Craig Simpson. Always a great guest because no one follows the Leafs more than this guy.
Nope.
Chris Cuthbert calling all the games. We'll get his thoughts on what he's seen in the first two games and what we might anticipate as Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins visit the Toronto Maple Leafs Saturday night at Scotiabank Arena. And just to double up the treat on a Friday, Colby Armstrong at the top of the hour will be in studio for us.
Both Toronto and Pittsburgh insight out of Colby, as always.
Yeah, so lots of fun ahead of us. In the meantime, the Toronto Maple Leafs, led by Steve Lawrence?
Now it's whatever you want. You can't
flip
be wrong.
A coin.
You cannot be wrong. Say whatever you want. Lorenz is how I'm going, though.
Little from column A, little from column B.
I don't think Leaf fans really care either way.
Because he keeps doing
at least
this.
They know what they think that they're getting now out of this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's turning into a media darling. He's turning into a fan favorite. Every time you see him on camera, his face lights up the whole set. Like, you can't wipe the grin off his face.
He's got a cup in his back pocket, and he's with his childhood dream team. He's having a blast.
Bobby McMahon, Max Pacioretty, also involved in the scoring. Mm-hmm. Rounded out with a John Tavares goal, but we'll exclude him because he makes too much money.
Yeah, it's so true, eh?
He doesn't fit in with them.
It's like, yeah, but anyway, let's talk about the other
guys. He ruined it.
Yeah.
Because the scoring's coming out of a combined salary of, what, $2.4 million
yeah.
out of these guys.
Yeah, so I guess we can start kind of overview. What'd you think watching game two against the New Jersey Devils?
There's probably parts of Wednesday night's game I liked a little better than what I saw out of Jersey. I think first and foremost, like the big storylines is the goaltending in the first two games.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the number one storyline.
I think that's fair.
And then the second one would be the depth guys.
Bottom six.
The guys that were coming into round, or smooth the edges off of the core.
Yeah.
Have done a fantastic job. And now people are saying, okay, when can we get the core going now?
Yeah. I'll add to that and say that this decor is really good. Like, there's a chance that this Leafs decor is legitimate. Better than maybe we've seen in the past. We've been doing the show for 4 years now. Perhaps the best decor we've seen.
Better. No question better.
Yep.
But to your point, like, will it be good enough? I think it's just way too early to tell. Mm-hmm.
But, first two games, they've given up one even strength goal.
Yes.
Last year they were a disaster, but not great. And I'll say I really like two pairs. I really like Riley and Tanev. They work perfectly together, just like kind of we thought they would work. And I really like McCabe and Ekman-Larsson together. I think McCabe, they both skate. They break the puck out. McCabe's obviously physical. I thought they've worked really well.
Sammy, your thoughts on the first two games?
Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of last night. Just, I didn't think I was going to be, and this comes from a fan's perspective, clearly. I didn't exactly think that I was going to feel the way I did about Keefe going into the game. But for me as a fan, I really wanted that win.
It's like surprised your ex-girlfriend feeling.
I really wanted the Leafs to beat Sheldon Keefe and the Devils. And, you're going into that game, second half of a back-to-back where they have a tough loss to the Habs. You've got your, fourth-string goalie? Third-string goalie?
I don't know what he is,
on the second game of the season, your starter's hurt. And, in the second half of a back-to-back, you really kind of have, if you're the team that's going to jump on them. And I thought they played really hard in that first period, got a 3-goal lead, and they kind of buoyed them throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you, it was sweet to beat Keefe. And it was sweet to cut his stuff after the game where it's just like, I don't miss this.
No.
So I know that's rude, but I don't miss it.
Yeah.
It is a Leaf hour. We should go to Craig Berube first on a Kipper's Clipper, but maybe we should start with Sheldon just to once again thank him for all those years of giving us so much content.
Oh yeah,
we'll give him the respect of giving us a
the respect in the handshake line, if you will.
Our first clip.
Oh, ironic.
Yeah,
head coach of the New Jersey Devils. We'll listen to Sheldon Keefe's overview of the game.
Can't spot any team in the league lead like that. I mean, I don't know that we deserved or that they deserved to be up three like the way that they were, but the reality is that they were. So it's a hard hole to get out of for sure. But in some cases, dug our own hole there. It's just puck play not nearly good enough and defending not even close to hard enough today. So paid for it. Puck just kept going in the net.
That was an added.
Oh, that's Keith. That's such a great Keith clip. You could feel the AM. That was a goalie criticism.
Felt like Leaf loss last year.
Right.
Or the last few years.
No,
not hard enough.
Didn't get a save.
Like that's.
I bet.
They weren't very good.
I have heard that clip.
Yes.
100 times in the 4 years we've been doing this show.
Variations on.
I got to tell you, if I'm Sheldon Keefe, and that's the. That's our home opener against the team that just stuffed me.
Just how we played.
I'm
soft.
Pissed.
Agree.
I'm pissed. Yeah. Boys, that is not the look or the effort or the attention to detail that that could help me look good here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the New Jersey Devils let him down last night. The players let their new head coach down against their former club.
Yeah. I wonder statistically, like, if coming back from Europe has something to do with that.
No, you know what? It did. Yeah. And shame on us because we didn't acknowledge going into that game last night that there is that thought that you're overseas, you're coming back, time change. Mm-hmm. Like, you played. No, it's out there, Sammy. It's been out there for 25, 30 years.
They got home on Monday night.
No, but
there is some stats that teams have come home and, like, pooped in the bed a little bit.
It's real.
Okay.
No, it's real.
Okay.
It's real.
Oh, yeah, these professional athletes got a bunch of sleep and had to play a game on a Thursday night. What a factor.
No.
Come on.
Listen.
They played like crap.
They did play like crap, but it has been probably for 30 years now. A built-in excuse for teams that go overseas and spend time.
Which is why they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Stupid. First of all.
What happened to the Leafs when they came back last year? I can't remember. Did they go poo-poo after that? I can't remember. When the Leafs came back?
Well, they were in November, though. Sweden, you're talking about.
Were they bad once they came back?
Willie signed.
Blends together. Oh, yeah, Willie was a
Willie
star.
Signed, and then he...
Yeah, I guess I could look that up. I have a computer in front of me. But anyways, continue.
You give him the benefit of the doubt, but... A little bit, for sure, on that.
But, I mean, you know, looking at the Leafs' fourth line last night, Lorenz, Kampf, and McMahon, that was a delightful line to watch, was it not? Like, big guys, fast on the forecheck, straight lines, get the pucks to the net. I think chances were 5-1 when they were out there. They outscored them. McMahon shoots one in. That's a really refreshing look down the Leafs' lineup. So, yeah, you know, they didn't get any offense out of their top guys, but... This is when you have depth. You don't have to be the ones every single night. And I know they're 1-1 and they lost the Montreal Canadiens. I'm very encouraged by the early results from this team.
Okay, let's go to Craig Berube on his bottom six.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they were I thought they were really good tonight. They just hounded on the forecheck and playing hard down low and got rewarded with some, you know, greasy goals around the net, which, you know, we gotta keep improving on that, and you know, we're getting there.
Yeah, that's you know, he's happy. He's happy with the bottom six. We saw the state-sponsored media clip, as you call it, Sam. Blueprint.
State-controlled media.
State-controlled media, where you know, he said he loves Beast, like thing Berube liked last night, which is good. Things going in the right direction.
And just to go back, the Leafs lost two games coming out of the Sweden trip. They lost that 3-2 weird afternoon game to the Blackhawks. And then they lost to the Penguins, I believe. Yeah. So there you go.
They lost in two non-playoff teams.
So how old is Steve Lorenz?
28.
So he's been around a little bit, and I get the salary cap crunch and how you just have to pick players, but it's still baffling that this guy could not sign a contract this summer, that right. The best that he could do is a PTO.
And I don't know that's true. Less,
well, I'm talking about 31 other teams, JB.
But I'm not, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's true that he had no contract opportunities other places.
Zippo, buddy. Zippo. Nobody takes a PTO because he wore a pair of pajamas when he was a kid over a guaranteed contract in the summer.
He made some comments to the effect of this wasn't the best contract or opportunity that was out there for him, but he wanted to play for the Leafs. I think, Kip, in some cases, these guys' PTOs are contracts. They're like, you're going to sign. Well,
listen, what I'm, if you probably would have watched him closely, and yep. I don't know if anybody did, like signing him to a $1.2 million contract for 2 years would have been a huge stretch mm-hmm. for him. By any other team, like, again,
yeah.
You don't take a PTO, come to training camp, maybe get hurt and not sign anything over something out there that's guaranteed or that yeah. provides you more security.
Maybe, he had one-way offers for the same dollar amount that a PTO was going to get him.
Nobody came.
Okay.
And even through training camp, do you understand, too, like he went through training camp mm-hmm. and then signed a day or two before. Up until that point, any team could turn around and say, hey, I've been watching your training camp with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You look good. Here's a two-year, $2 million contract.
Right.
Like,
so what is your point?
My point is that there's a lot of stupid teams out there. That's my point.
I thought maybe your point was that he's going to play worse.
No, I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
And I said a week ago, that guy's in the starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
My point is like,
how do you not?
What are you doing, guys?
Of
what are you doing?
All the guys that like, get contracts for dollar amounts, like this guy yeah. kills penalties,
I just think there's
four
dumb
checks.
Teams out there.
Yeah. Okay.
That wouldn't look at him and say he's a serviceable player yeah. and I'm willing to give him 1.2 million times two.
Right. And I think for the Toronto Maple Leafs, if you're a fan, you're going, thank goodness there's some dumb teams out there.
Yes.
Teams fall in love with their own guys, right? Like just someone who's been around that they know and they're like, he's good in the room.
What did he play last night? 15, 16 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but
penalty kill, goal and an assist.
And yeah, you're right. He played 15:07.
And a huge smile on his face. Now, the Leafs, after what they've witnessed in training camp,
yeah.
are not surprised at all.
No.
That when they played him last night, that's what they expected. My point is like,
that is strange.
How does a guy like that go to a PTO and then play 15 minutes and get a goal and assist in his second game?
Goal, assist, multiple hits, a anyways, takeaway, took two good. Hits, blocked two shots.
And big, like, big fan.
I mean, that backhand, it was like, am I 14 watching Matt Sundin here again? Like, what the hell was that? Where'd that come from?
He even said he got all that one. Yeah, no, what a performance.
So, unlike the first game where Stolarz and Montembeau go toe-to-toe,
yeah.
this one appeared to me over early mm-hmm. between the Hill of the Beast and Markstrom.
You think that helped?
Who stunk last night.
Yeah. You think that helped Hildeby? Like they got out to a lead and he could maybe settle in a little bit more?
Do pitchers like a 2-0 right. or 3-0 lead
sure.
going into the third, fourth, and fifth inning?
Feels better.
So when I saw that Bobby McMahon goal, I'm like,
But for McMahon.
Sheldon thought he had Freddie Anderson in the playoffs maybe. Hey,
gave him some Ilya Samsonov flashbacks on that one.
Yeah.
Let's get Sheldon Keefe's thoughts on his goaltender, Markstrom, last night.
Yeah, not a great first period for that for him. But, yeah, I would agree he settled. I mean, I didn't think he gave up very much after. He had the one sequence. I think he made a great save for us, and that kind of kept us in the game. But there was nobody here on their game tonight.
I don't want to do this anymore.
Hey, what do you think the right way to handle a veteran pro like Markstrom is, like for Keith? Like, is it better to lean on him, or is it better to just be like, he's fine, he's good, he was fine, you know, we all have off nights.
Okay, but like...
Because that is kind of leany on-y.
Yeah, kind of.
You know.
Game three of the season.
Right. Yeah. After a couple of wins.
Yep. Yeah.
Seemed like a bit much.
Whatever.
That's what we used to do with the clips, though.
I know. I got to tell you, the sound of his voice, like I've listened to it so much, and I've actually really liked what I've heard from Berube through the first of training camp and the first couple of games and his way that he does it with the media. Hmm. Like, it's clearly not as good for us, but it's better.
Yeah.
The way he handles it and the way he talks less and all of that. But
we did have him on, Lorenz, if we wanted to tie a ribbon on the Lorenz conversation.
Okay, let's hear it.
Clip five, please, from Craig Berube.
I mean, he's a second and third effort guy, but he's smart, knows how to play the game the right way defensively. He has a real good stick, you know, and he's big and long, gets in the way. You know, that's really what his game is.
There you go.
You know, I think the worst part about the Berube clips is that he exposes how not rocket science the sport is.
Yeah, 100%.
It's the plan.
You know, Keith and Dubas and guys like myself just twisting ourselves into pretzels to explain the game, and it's like
big, long, gets in the way. Second effort guy.
It's not that hard.
It's really not. It's really, really not. So can I read you guys a stat from Luke Fox Jukebox on Twitter?
Yes.
It's the first time ever that Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander have all been kept off the score sheet in the season's first two games.
Yeah, I mean, three great players, two straight games, unlikely. You know, last year Matthews led the NHL in posts and crossbars. Mm-hmm. Three in opening two games.
Yeah, whether it's the first two games or middle of February or March, Leaf fans don't like that.
No.
They don't like it.
No.
Have you think they've all looked really good?
I didn't mind them in Montreal.
I think last night,
another post for Matthews, I think. Yeah. And outside of that, the sore spot is the power play, guys. Okay? It's just...
The spot is sore.
And
it is an acupuncture wound.
Yeah. It was butt ugly last night. And the last one was horrific.
Yeah.
In the third period.
Good news for Mark Savard is you got time. And you'd rather start crappy and build towards it than come out of the gates hot.
Yeah, you never want to start crappy, my friend.
Well, you know, but you can picture the conversation when they're, you know, lighting it up in the playoffs and the power play. Remember the first four games of the season when they couldn't make the pass?
It's just too slow.
Slow. It's exactly
It's
right.
just slow.
No and urgency.
They do have a sense to get Austin the puck.
For sure.
A lot.
For sure.
And they got to just stop it. And we got Craig Simpson, who, you know, pretty good power play guy in his day with the Edmonton Oilers. We'll get his thoughts on it in about 12 minutes. But, you know, I'll go back to Sammy. Sammy made a good point.
Me? When?
Yeah.
The other day. Me?
Do you remember it?
No. God, no.
Could they dump the puck in one?
No.
Time? Okay. Then no. I don't know. No.
Split them up.
Oh, yeah. I like that you're giving me credit for that point.
I do.
Yeah. Everyone in this market's been screaming about that for 2 years. I really appreciate the credit. But yeah, split them up. Please, split them up.
Like, if you're going to stick with this philosophy that we're running two power plays, which has been pretty consistent by Berube in the first two games, then split them up. Have two equals, not a 1A and a 1B, but two equals. Boys, fight over it.
Now, that's what you want to do in playoffs, too?
No. This is just now. This is the here and now.
Yeah.
Who knows what the look or the team or the chemistry will be like in April. I'm not worried about April. I'm worried about going 0-4 against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
You know, last night, the top guys played just over 4 minutes on the power play, the power play one unit, like 420, 410, 420. And the second unit played 330 of power play time. Doesn't quite math out, but ballpark. And then the game before, they were even closer. So they're using the second unit, who also looks gross.
Yeah.
So...
Do you want to hear Berube talk about it?
Of course.
He's got a clip on the power play. Clip four, please, Derek.
Just our entries aren't very good, for one. We're just, you know, both teams we played, the line's pretty stacked, right? And we're not putting pucks in and just going and working, getting them back. So that's one area. And the other area for me is it's just we're not attacking and shooting enough. Like, we're kind of passing it around, looking for we're looking to pass it in the net. Rather than, you know, just attacking and shooting, getting pucks there, recoveries and things like that. So, and, you know, there were some plays that are there. We're just not seeing them right now. We're not quick enough making them. You know, we had a backdoor play to Riley. It's just, if it's quicker, you know, it's a goal, right? There's plays there, but they're not seeing it clean right now. We got to, you know, look at some video with them and then work on it.
If Riley's quicker... That's what he said.
No. If they see Riley quicker, you can make that
play. I know the exact play he's talking about, too. Tavares was slow on it. Yeah. Missed him. And it goes out.
So, you played power play in junior, presumably.
Once upon a time.
I mean, right. He had 61 tucks in the L, but he played in the power play.
Some power
62.
Play.
Oh. I'd give you credit, and did you screw that up?
I'm sorry.
I didn't play in the NHL, but the problem was not that I wasn't offensively talented enough. It's for other reasons. And so I was on the power play my whole life. And the most frustrating thing when you're a power play guy is to hear your coach just be like, we just got to bang into the net and bang rebounds in. Just not enough pucks to the net. Just like, these guys are the world-class, elite, skilled guys. Some of the best athletes on earth on the Leafs power play. Surely there's more to it than they're going to be a team that bangs it to the net and bangs for rebounds, right?
I mean, it's not the worst idea.
No, but it's the, we don't have skill in this team. We're going to bang it to the net and bang for rebounds. We're going to crash the net.
Yeah. I think there's just, yeah.
Stacking the line, I agree, chip it by, listen, go get it.
They have over the years developed some habits, and I think one of them is to kind of rely on Austin a little bit more.
I agree
more
that
on the
that cripples
play.
Them, and I think that used to kill Pittsburgh looking for Malkin and hitting one timers. You know, like, there's other options.
And Mitch Marner's guilty as anybody to just sometimes force
pucks.
Yeah, and that's Mark Savard's job now is to break it down and rebuild it.
Tavares is a great finisher in tight. They can make little passes into him.
Yeah, as last night he showed again with his goal. The guy can play in tight.
Yeah.
And he can...
That was a great goal.
Really good goal.
It was. Yeah. I think you tweeted it was...
Oshawa
Generals days.
Yeah.
But I'd also like to see Ekman Larson, and I know we're going to get there. I don't blame Riley entirely, but I'd like to see Ekman Larson do it. He's had 50-point seasons. He's a, you know... 10, 15 goal seasons here and there. It 120 goal season.
Could develop into that for sure.
If they're going to split it up, boys, what do the two look like?
Well,
Matthews.
Like, who goes down? On the second unit?
Willie and JT on one power play and Austin and Mitch on the other power play.
And then fill in the blanks.
Well, and what's nice about that, too, is it makes your bench management way easier. Right?
Yep.
Because, you know, you're just rolling out lots of your pairs anyway for your lines.
Yep.
You got enough guys. Pacioretty can do it. Obviously, Robertson can shoot it in the net a bit. They've got options to fill in now, which is good. Pacioretty's been all right, boys.
Yeah, you mentioned Robertson, too. Have you ever seen a guy more inspired to... show his former coach that he was a good hockey player.
He hustles. He was
last night. He was shot out of a cannon in the first period.
Yeah.
Shot out of a cannon.
Still gets bounced around a little bit.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I don't know what the team's going to look like by April or May. If they can insulate him, there's a chance he could still be here at the end of the year. But if by chance they think that they need to be bigger. In certain areas, you know,
yeah,
there's a chance he might not be here.
You know, my problem with Robertson is he's not a guy who plays with his teammates. You know, like he seems like he's on, he gets the puck and he's way ahead of the play and he's on his own and he takes a shot. Or, you know, he gets the puck in the corner and he wants to take it to the net. There's not a lot of small area passes, slowing it down, coming up together. I don't know. He's still got some work to do to become a more complete offensive player.
His first two games for ice time is 12-27 game one. He's 10-16 last night. They were on the penalty kill a lot last night, so that's probably those 2 minutes, that's probably where they went, right? But, I mean, this is pretty similar output to what he was when Sheldon Keefe was the coach.
Yeah, he's going to – it's tough for him, but he has to score a bit. And it's not like he needs to score every two games. That's a 40-goal season. But, you know, if you don't score in three games, now there goes your 30-goal season. We need him in the 20s at least.
It's going to be interesting to watch Pacioretty here if he can truly find this role that he's developed in just two short games. If he can be a guy that can contribute on maybe a lot of nights that look like last night where he's under 10 minutes.
Was he really?
Oh, yeah. And it's tricky, guys. It's really tricky. That, again, you're coming out of training camp, first couple of games, you're jacked, you're juiced, you're finishing checks, you're going. But a guy like this, over the course of his career, this is brand new to him, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the chances of him able to put a smile on his face, come in, play 9 minutes a night, find a way to still put the puck in the net.
Well, he played 13. I mean, a lot of it had to do with, he's not a penalty killer. They had, what, they shorthanded six times last night? Like, they, that was a big chance.
Which, by the way, I also thought the officiating was pretty poor. I didn't agree with the, it was the one interference one.
Oh, my God, on Connor Timmins?
Yeah. I didn't mind it.
Oh,
you, oh, I'm telling you.
Well, I mean, if you're going to call that, call the flying elbow in the neutral zone on Dylan.
But there's one.
On
the there's one thing to be said on that interference. He didn't have a stick. Mm-hmm. Okay? There's a different look on interference when you don't have a stick.
You can't claim you had other intent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's, I think, it was missed on the telecast last night. Mike Johnson, of course, does a terrific job, a good friend of mine. But Connor Timmins running interference or a pick without a stick is truly interference.
Yeah, because you're not going there for the purposes of making a play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, right, that's fine. But I'll give you
then
that.
Then call the flying elbows.
Okay. I mean,
there's like four in that game. For sure. The ref's looking right at
for
it.
For sure.
No. Ref talk.
Should we? Poison. We got to mention Willie Nylander's penalty late in the game.
Okay.
And that's another one where, like, if an official does not call a guy slap-shotting the puck like that as an unsportsman.
Right?
What's that?
He didn't call the...
He didn't. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, if he doesn't call that, then we're going to have, after every penalty, some guys rocket pucks anywhere they want all over the ice. That's a bad look. That was an unsportsmanlike that should have been called, in my opinion.
Yeah.
To me...
Good point.
That should have been two for holding, two for embellishment. Like, that's the perfect spot for where it was an infraction, but, like, Jack Hughes, you're a world-class skater, buddy. You went down, like, you got hammered from behind. He put his hand on your hip for 1 second. You went down like a bag of feathers. Like, it was brutal. He was flopping all over the ice the whole night.
What do you think of Willie the first two games?
No good.
I thought he's been very perimeter. He's had the puck a lot, but it's all circling the zone.
He, to me, is just caught between old Sheldon and new Craig Berube. Mm-hmm. Like, he is just like, he doesn't know whether he should poop or wind his watch.
Yeah. I don't know. If I have an $8 million contract, I'm not too stressed.
No, I don't think it's stress, but I think he's just caught.
Yeah.
He's
not
just
sure.
Right in the, I can't blow the zone. I like to blow the zone, but
he's let him blow the zone or make him a center.
And actually, he's been pretty good at it over the last few years. Like, at the end of the day, if you're going to have one guy cheat, it would be him.
There's almost nobody better at it.
And then just live with it.
But he
won't do it. Like, he won't do anything remotely like he did with Sheldon, because Berube's watching.
They're going to neuter his unique and cheating ability.
He's got to find that area where I can please him and still be myself.
I think that's part of the early season feeling out process.
Yeah.
What do you...
Might take a while.
Yeah.
That line is
And
not...
the one who may have to adjust may be Berube.
That line not for me, really.
That don't line even, is no. not a playoff line.
Well, no, it's like Willie and Tavares have been playing together now for, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
Do they have any – have they ever had any chemistry? It's like, it's crazy. It's just because
they're fine.
It's default because you have Matthews and Marner. It's just the next two best guys play together, but it just, they really don't seem like they
Wasn't
hook up
like
on a ton.
A year where it was
Who
Matthews
are we talking about?
And
sorry,
Tavares and Nylander.
Yeah, but Tavares likes to shoot the puck.
I know.
So is Willie.
Yeah.
I know.
So where's the chemistry? Where's the.
But they've played together for 5 years. You don't think you'd find a little?
No. No.
Okay. All right.
No. And listen, again, John's good in tight. Mm-hmm. And he likes to shoot the puck, but there's 175 more feet of ice mm-hmm. that he struggles with.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fine for two games, but I know exactly.
There's parts of his game where he turns the puck over and he's a little slow, and it's
I think it
might be tough for Willie.
Yeah. I think it was Andrew Brewer who made the point about Tavares that when he's a guy who scores net front and he's the centerman, he has to use the whole rink. A winger like Willie, he's back to the top of the circles and he shoots from farther away. He's using less rink. Like Tavares may have to play wing at some point to maintain his effectiveness as a scorer for the Leafs. But we've had that conversation. It's a totally different kettle of fish.
Let's go. Oh,
before we go, I would like to hear Hildeby. Can we just get a quick one in?
Okay. Hildeby number one is hilarious.
Okay.
Quickly, so let's do that.
It was good. It was a lot of noise. Yeah. I was just trying to get in my seat, honestly.
After the game?
But, it's a good feeling. Better than quiet.
What was the last one I missed?
Better than quiet.
Better than quiet.
Because apparently everybody was just going nuts.
Listen, I caught his interview after the game. Like, how do you not like this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, he just seems so, like, sweet.
Yeah.
He's got the right temperament
for
a goalie.
Joseph Wall's a sweet guy.
At least they have too many sweet guys. They're starting to be sweet as hell.
They're really like likable guys.
Yeah.
And you are cheering for them.
Maybe that'll offset a core that everyone finds unlikable.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We return. We got Craig Simpson joining us, two-time Stanley Cup champion. We'll get into the Leafs more. Their power play. How does it get going? That more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Take two. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. Craig Simpson there. Nope, not yet. All right. Want to get his thoughts on Berube and the adjustments the players make. Let's welcome in Craig Simpson, two-time Stanley Cup champion, in-game analyst for Sportsnet Hockey Night in Canada. Always a pleasure to have him on our show again this season. Simmer, thanks for doing this. We know you're a busy guy, but we always get great insight from you, particularly because you are the guy covering the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, I wanted to talk to you about Craig Berube. And from a player's perspective, when a coach comes in, like, you know, we've all had multiple different coaches based on either getting traded or signing with a new team. But when you're with the same team and you get a new coach, what has that been like for the majority of these players now going from Sheldon Keefe to Craig Berube?
Yeah, as you guys both know, it's a big difference. And I think some people maybe say, well, I mean, you're a pro player going into your ninth year. Morgan Rielly, his 12th year. You know how to play. You know how the systems are. And it's kind of just preparing yourself for your game. But when you get a dramatic change like that and bringing in a guy that has a bit of a different voice and a little bit of a different attitude, and I think the players all know coming in and expecting, Berube likes a certain style, so we got to change our style. There's a lot of things to process, and all the while trying to get your game back to the level so that you have the confidence. As you guys know, if you as an individual don't have your confidence at the high level, forget about impressing the coach. You now all of a sudden early, especially when there's zeros across the board on your stat line, you know, you start thinking about yourself and maybe doubting yourself. So I do think there's an adjustment. I'm not surprised that, you know, guys are going to have to understand what's expected out of them. That might be a little bit different than the way that they've been, you know, coming into each season the last 3 years under Sheldon, kind of knowing exactly where they stand, how the coach feels about them. Now it's like having a new teacher, right? You got to prove to the teacher that you're on top of your game and you understand what you have to do. And now it's a process of going out there and trying to execute it quickly.
Simmer, great to have you on again. Thank you very much. I did want to get your thoughts then. Do you think it's a coincidence that Nylander, Marner, and Matthews all have 0 points through two games, first game with a new coach? Like, you know, it's not like they didn't play well or whatever, but it's very unusual to see that out of those guys.
Well, almost shocking, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, there's again where you look at the core guys that, you know, think of even last year. Austin had a 40-goal season, you know, a bump down from his 60 the year before. You know that he's going to be motivated. He's going to come out firing well. What does he do? He gets a hat trick in his first two games. So you think of just how Austin Matthews would have felt after game two last year, and now new coach, new pressures, new captaincy, and all of a sudden you're going, oh, my gosh, like I'm never sitting here with goose eggs across. So the guy's human. There's no question it has to challenge you a little bit and get you taken back. So I do think it's a surprise. I'm not sure, Justin, if it's a coincidence with Berube being there, but it you have to figure that it factors in a little bit. So, I mean, the one good thing, I'm so happy from going into Sidney Crosby coming in here tomorrow on a Saturday night, first Saturday night of the year, that they were able to bounce back against New Jersey. I mean, you know what it would be like now. Your show would be a little different, guys, if they were 0-2. And so I think the bounce back was great. And, you know, maybe if you're looking at what has failed this team in the big games and playoffs with the elimination games, it's their lack of depth and lack of any kind of production out of anybody other than those four guys. So if nothing else, the game against, you know, their old coach and the New Jersey Devils maybe is a good sign that you can win a game like that, that quite frankly was a pretty important game. You know, getting shut out for the first time in what, 3 years in Montreal. I thought they played well in Montreal and could have won the game easily, but you know, could have doesn't get you a win. So I think maybe that's the first sign of saying, you know, if you can get that production from the bottom six and a push there and a game that you win on the road, that early on is a really important one, you know, maybe that's progress. And I think that's what they have to look at is if this team is going to be better, it's going to have to be better in those roles. And I think it showed a little bit there in game number two.
You're listening to Craig Simpson, two-time Stanley Cup champion, color analyst for Sportsnet. So, Simmer, that explains a new system, less east-west, maybe more north-south. And then there's the power play, where these guys have been together, all of them, for close to a decade here. They should know each other on a power play with their eyes closed. Yet they looked, in the first two games, like complete strangers. How do you explain that?
Yeah, I think it's the old saying, you know, there are times when it's paralysis by analysis. You know, you overanalyze your game a little bit and you start trying to shape it a certain way. You've got a new voice that, you know, for Mark Savard, he understands. This is a power play that 3 years ago was best in the National Hockey League, 2 years ago second, last year seventh. So there didn't need a whole lot of tinkering going on. This is a unit and a group that knows how to play with each other, for each other, how to play off of each other. So I do think if I were in that role, it's that balance of not trying to overwhelm with all kinds of new ideas right off the bat. I think you got to get to know how the guys react, how they interact, and shape your changes and tweaks around it. And, you know, last year to start, they were 4-for-7 to start off the season. They had power play goals in 10 of the first 14. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a shocker. As you guys know, early in the season, you know, everything is magnified so much in the early going when you're either 0-4 or you get on a hot start. So I just think your analysis is just not really free-flowing. When a power play is clicking, the guys are reading and playing off each other. The entries are clean. You know, the passes aren't telegraphed. There's nothing static. And I think there's been, you know, the Montreal game, you only had the four chances. And early on, it was the entry. You know, a sloppy entry, now you're going back for it. And guys like nothing more than getting the quick entry, and now you start to read off each other in the offensive zone. And that just hasn't quite come together yet. And, you know, I do think that if anything else, what I always loved about in the coaching of a power play is give the guys the information of what to expect from the penalty kill. Like, you analyze the penalty kill to present to the guys, this is where their pressure is. On the entry, they like the pressure here, so you know what to expect. I want them to have the freedom to play off each other and interact. And, you know, I thought in preseason, they were pretty effective. And I thought they had a lot of good free-flowing, not only puck movement, but moving bodies too. And it's really hard when you get a threat. You know, you mentioned before, Tavares really good in tight. So all of a sudden, Tavares is in tight. Matthews is on the right flank. Well, two passes later, Matthews is in the middle. And then all of a sudden, Matthews is on the left side. That kind of movement creates havoc for the penalty killers. And I just think, you know, it's only two games in, so no time to panic. But I just think they haven't had that free-flow mentality. And if I'm Mark Savard, that's the first thing I'm addressing is, guys, go play. You know, go play. And Justin, I think you're talking about the, you know, putting pucks to the net, just throwing pucks in there. When they have had success in the past, though,
yeah,
they make three quick puck movements, and they've outmanned the penalty killers in front. At times, you've got Tavares, Marner, and on the side, even Matthews at times. You got a 3-on-1 down on that rebound, and bang, it's in the back of the net.
Right.
So sometimes that simplicity is outman the penalty killers, take the advantage of having that extra guy and get that puck to that difficult area. And I think that sometimes when you're not making those free flow plays, having that mentality and putting yourself with those chances in there is where you can all of a sudden get one. And then now the burden is off your back.
Right. It makes such a big difference to sort of relieve that pressure. So these are like the higher level things that make the difference between being a good team and bad. We talked about the core and the systems and the power play. These are big things. At the fringes of this team, there's still some battles that are going on. One of them that has my eye is for 6D, particularly that right side. Connor Timmins has played the first two games while Timothy Liljegren has watched. Timmins has been able to produce offense anytime he's in the lineup. He just can't stay in the lineup. What are your thoughts on how things are sort of shaping up this season? Elliot Friedman reporting that Timothy Liljegren is someone that they're actively shopping, really.
Yeah. No, I think there's your first example of a new set of eyes. You know, I always felt that Timmins was a guy, you said it, he doesn't get a whole lot of chances, didn't get a whole lot of ice time, and you look down 2 years ago and you go, God, the guy had 14 points in 25 games.
Yeah.
Like, you extrapolate that over 82, that's a heck of a season for a third D pairing. And I think what in talking with Berube a little bit about him, I think you listen to his words and he says, I like the big body, he's a good skater, and he gets the puck and he transfers it up ice. And I think size does have a little play, and that is one thing for Liljegren that, you know, has hurt him in the past, and probably one of the reasons why in those big playoff games he's been in the press box and not on the ice. So, you know, I think the fresh set of eyes of a new coaching staff has hurt Timothy Liljegren and definitely helped Connor Timmins. And I think it's amazing to me, some guys that just you know, don't get the chance and don't get the opportunity to stay in there. Some of it for Timmins has been injury. He got injured at the worst possible time, a couple of opportunities where he probably would have been in the lineup. But I just think that Berube looks at a guy that says, hey, he makes good outlet passes. He doesn't overhandle it. He doesn't get himself trapped. And that simplicity, I think if you've watched Craig's teams, he likes that. And I think that's been one of the positives for Timmins here early on.
The depth certainly has come through with the play of Lorenz and McMahon scoring a goal last night. Where are you on Nick Robertson and his chances of holding down his spot all season?
Nick has to learn how to play this game at the high speed that you have to be a regular, at the consistent level that you have to be a regular and to have the coach's trust. And he has to find a way as the smaller body. So what I noticed about him, I think Justin might have said it before, he gets knocked off the puck far too often for me. Mm-hmm. And one thing you have to learn is use that size, that low center of gravity, but he's got to get his chest and his body up a little bit. To me, if you watch him, he's always hunched over and going into the battle with his head too low. And if I'm a defender that has the physical size and the height advantage, I've got a guy that I can knock off balance or knock him down. And those are the little things you have to learn and have confidence in as a player to say, when I go into the battle and I'm going up against a 6'5 defender, I'm not going to win the physical battle. So I have to win the mental battle. I have to go in and attack and be under control and have a good stick and pop that puck out and get out the other side. You know, and I think that's where I think without question, he's learned the work ethic part of it. And he's a battler and he wants to be there. You can see the desire that he has to stay in the lineup here, but a lot of it has to do with your technique and learning how to be a little bit more efficient in those battles. And I've watched an awful lot of them. And, you know, I looked at Cole Caulfield in Montreal early on, had a little bit of that as well. A smaller guy that I thought was way too forward going into the battle and too easy to knock off the puck or knock off balance and take the puck away from him. And he's learned to be under much more control and much more centered gravity. And now you go into those same battles and you come out instead of being on the ice and the puck's going the other way, you've slowed the play down, you've got some support. And those are the little things from a coach's perspective that go, you start winning more of those little battles, you're going to stay in the lineup. And you know, when you do get your chance offensively, Nick's got a shot that can beat a goaltender from good distance. So those are things that you can't teach. The other ones I think he's got to learn if he's going to stay in this lineup throughout that stretch.
Simmer, always excellent stuff when you join us. Thanks for coming aboard. Looking forward to having you all season long. Have a great call tomorrow night, Hockey Night in Canada, Pittsburgh and Toronto.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Simmer. Appreciate it.
That's Craig Simpson. Listen, they've been trying to move money and Liljegren like since the summer. Like, they've got a problem coming up here, guys. They got to move somebody. This is a must. Somebody's got to go.
Okay.
Yarncruck's coming back. Connor Dewar's out there. Hakanpää, when are we going to see him? That's money coming in. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to go. Mm-hmm. It's Liljegren that no one is taking $3 million off the Leafs' hands for Liljegren.
But he's a good player. You know, he's just
But it's not happening today.
Yeah.
And it probably...
I agree.
It's not
October,
happening.
It's hard.
Everybody thinks that they've got their guys
for
right
sure.
Now that they've still got to look at.
Hurt.
No one is desperate right now to add a $3 million defenseman.
Yeah.
And he is a serviceable player.
He's an NHLD.
They only had two choices, sign him or lose him for nothing. And
yeah.
don't sign him and let him walk.
Yeah.
And clearly they signed him, but they're paying a price for it right now because something's got to give. Yarncroc's coming back. That's $2 million right there, and there's a few more other guys.
But they've got little time on that, right? Because Yarncroc was
10 games.
A little time.
10 games. Mm-hmm. That'll sneak up on you. Speaking of sneaking up on you,
often people get hurt and solve your problems for you. But
speaking of sneaking up on you, we're gonna take texts later in the show after we talk to Colby in studio. We're gonna take some texts. But somebody texted me and said, "Can we get a little love for Matthew Nyes last night?" And that absolute running back lore of the shoulder on Dougie Hamilton. Oh my God.
That was big boy.
My
remember,
God.
John Riggins for the Washington Redskins. I was in Washington when they won the Super Bowl.
Really?
And that guy
run through people
was that guy.
Yeah.
But that was violent last night. Like, I mean, Dougie Hamilton did not see that coming.
He's 23. Yeah. He's going to be a truck.
Yeah. That's awesome. Years. Got me off my seat.
Put him on the second line.
Loved
by
it.
The way.
Yep, me too.
All right. On that note, not so much of a truck. Maybe like, I don't know,
Colby?
Like
an S.
Yes, Colby. Not a truck. Thought at times he was a truck. But he's probably just like a
SUV.
Ask Marian Hossa about that.
I
don't know if you'll agree with
a minivan. Colby Armstrong, when we return in studio.